This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on March 16th, 2011. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning. The open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for March 16th will come to order. The first item on our agenda is the correction and approval of minutes. Vice Chair, do we have a motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move to approve agenda document number 11-15, minutes for the open session held on March 3rd, 2011.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. The next item on our agenda is draft advisory opinion in 2011-3, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, the National Republican Congressional Committee, the Republican National Committee, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and the National Republican Senatorial Committee. They are represented by their party lawyers, and I understand representing the group will be Mr. Elias and Mr. Toner. And once we proceed to that part of the discussion, if commissioners have questions for those our former distinguished chair and Mr. Elias, we will invite them to the table. Mr. Elias is also distinguished, but in different ways. Vice Chair, I understand we have some late submitted documents.
Yes, I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider the late submission of agenda document numbers 11-13A, 11-14A, 11-16, and agenda document number 11-16A. Thanks.
Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 6-0. We will hear from Mr. Adkins of the Office of General Counsel. Please proceed when ready.
Thank you, Chair Bowerly, and good morning, Commissioners. Agenda documents 11-14 and 11-14-A respond to an advisory opinion request submitted by the Republican National Committee, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, the National Republican Senatorial Committee, the National Republican Congressional Committee, and the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. The request asks whether the committees may use their recount funds to finance non-recount litigation expenses. Draft A concludes that the committees may use their recount funds for the proposed purpose, and Draft B concludes that they may not. We received one comment on the drafts, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Adkins. Are there questions for counsel from OGC or for the requesters or discussion on the drafts? It must be that we've started our commission early, your meeting earlier than usual.
We started on time. That would make it earlier than usual.
Ms. Quibert? Mr. Commissioner McGann.
We could play rock, paper, scissors to see who goes first.
We could.
On three? No? You know that game?
I do know that game.
Okay, all right. I guess I'll start. I am going to have questions. I don't know if that'd be easier to have them move now or later to avoid the fanfare, but I'm going to have questions for the
please join us at the table.
The distinguished for different reasons, distinguished gentlemen. See, this is why it's good to get them to the table sooner rather than later, because now they got to move the chairs around. Who's to the left? Who's to the right? We all set. First question I have, I think, is more for counsel, because I'm struggling with draft B. It seemed to me that the commission went down a certain road years ago and then stayed on the road post McCain-Feingold by saying McCain-Feingold didn't change the road it had gone down with respect to money for certain kinds of things, those things being recounts and legal defense funds. And recently we went down the road again in the Franken AO, and the DSCC was part of it, a national party, and there it seemed perfectly okay with everyone involved that a national party could raise money which could be seen as beyond the limits imposed by McCain-Feingold, but no, it was okay because it was still within the limits and prohibitions. It was just essentially a separate bite of the apple. And what I don't understand is the distinction between that and what Draft B does. And I'm looking for more of a legal explanation as to why Draft B draws the distinction. And I'm asking counsel because I think the original counsel draft is essentially what Draft B is. So I'm kind of curious as to why there's a distinction. I don't see one on its face, but maybe there's one there, and I'm just missing it.
I don't want to get too much into the rationale behind Draft B. It's similar in some respects to the
original
counsel draft.
Right, it's not entirely similar, but it's a lot closer than, Draft A, which is the other direction.
Right. As far as the legal rationale behind why recounts would be different than the proposed expenses here, I think the draft tries to lay out an explanation as to why recounts are similar to runoff elections and would therefore trigger some sort of a separate contribution limit, but the expenses proposed here would not. But again, that's just my read of the draft. I would defer to others on going any further.
Then, factually, this is where I want to ask the requesters a few questions and maybe help me with the facts, because if anything, it seems to me legal defense fund is farther away from sort of the gravitational pull of regulation here, right? I mean, if recount funds are okay, particularly when it's concerning a specific federal candidate, you have a legal defense fund which seems to be less connected to the concerns raised in the act. So it seems to me it would be an easier answer to say you could use the money for a legal defense fund, not a harder answer. I've actually taken the time to read all the briefs and the litigation, so I'm actually familiar with what's going on in the case, and I don't really want to get into all that, although I do have to say I think the preemption argument's a good one, to the extent that you're nodding, but you didn't raise it. The Democrats did.
If the commissioner along the way would like to find that, we wouldn't object.
That's why I'm mentioning it on the record. You know, BICRA said you can no longer have non-federal accounts. Pre-BICRA, you had the federal side, you had the non-federal side. They're essentially two different entities in the eyes of many law. Would you agree with that, Mr. Elias?
Yes.
Yes. Even in Texas, they're two different entities, and that's the challenge, I guess, is you have a case, so people understand what the case is about. You have a fellow who's caught up, accused of some Ponzi scheme, and money that went primarily to the non-federal accounts, which no longer exist. Well, the receiver for the alleged victims wants the money back. Money doesn't exist. The account doesn't exist. Shouldn't come out of the hard money account. You have to defend this, and you're asking for whether you can use recount funds to defend the lawsuit. Basically, that's the gist of the suit. Factually, though, this doesn't concern any particular federal candidate, right? It's just money given to the party committee.
Party committee contributions.
Right. Unlike Franken, which actually had a live candidate there that would benefit from the money, right? So when you look at sort of the reason for limiting contributions, you don't have the same McConnell-esque justification that you would have to limit money for this legal defense fund, right? Meaning parties are being treated differently by the courts because of the proxy to the candidates, right? That's the corruption interest. You don't really have that here because you don't have candidates involved. This isn't a candidate issue. This is defending the party in a lawsuit for things that, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Are there other facts that distinguish the legal defense fund idea from the recount fund along the same lines that I'm making, right? When you look at the core of why we have limits in place, other than the fact no candidates are involved? I can think of a few. You filed some comments. They're in there. Maybe flesh them out, and then we can go from there.
Well, I think, Commissioner, you're making a number of good points here. This is fundamentally a political party committee issue. Candidates are not in the middle of the dollars that are at issue. You correctly note that the predominant dollars at stake in the Janovy litigation are non-federal funds that were raised prior to the McCain-Feingold law. But I think it is important to note that there are some hard dollar funds also at stake in the Janovy litigation. And, you know, the rationale, really, I think, for our advisory opinion request was that the committees are trying to operate consistently with the McCain-Feingold law and the hard dollar limits that are in place on the national committees. And, you know, the three things that we tried to sketch out in our papers were one, that none of the dollars that we're seeking to raise or spend here are non-federal funds. We think that's really important. These are all federal dollars raised subject to the prohibitions of the Act and reported to the Commission. And that secondly, and we think equally important, we're not seeking to raise any additional hard dollar funds. This is an effort to use funds that have already been raised, subject to the Act and to the Commission's advisory opinions, for expenses that we think there's a really strong argument are not in connection with any federal election, are not in connection with a candidate, Commissioner, as you note, are not for the purpose of influencing, you know, federal elections, but instead, like the recount funds and the recount expenses, it can be seen as not for the purpose of influencing an election. So we view this as an effort to seek confirmation under the precedents that the agency has announced in the last few years, that when you're talking about hard dollar funds and political parties and expenses like recount expenses that are not for the purpose of influencing a federal election, you know, there is the ability to raise and spend these funds. We do think this, if we're successful in getting an advisory opinion, we do think at some level that this will help the committees, the national committees, operate consistent with the McCain-Feingold law. That's really what we're seeking to do here, and where I think the past opinions have been helpful in that regard as well. But I'll defer to Mr. Elias for additional points he might want to make.
Before you add, when the request first came in, before I read it in detail, I assumed you were asking for another bite at the McCain-Feingold apple, a separate legal defense fund. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And I thought, well, the answer to that's yes, because we've already gone down the road of different bites at the apple. And once you go down that road, you know, you're really only going to have a legal defense fund, a recount fund, maybe a redistricting fund. There's not a whole lot out there. So you have a couple other bites at the apple, right? Then I read the request. You're not even asking that. You're asking a much easier question, which is one that I think is in large part already answered, at least logically. I don't see the recount notion as being some narrow exception to the general ban. It seems to me that the logic of what the Commission's already done extends to using the money for legal defense funds. I mean, we just had the Carnahan AO the other day, which involved a candidate. Candidates and incumbent politicians can raise additional funds for legal defense funds, and yet no one seems to think that causes corruption or appearance of corruption. So at the national party level, I'm fishing factually for the factual hook that justifies draft B. I don't see it. I see it, and I'm trying to flesh out the converse of that, facts that justify draft A. Mr. Toner's given me some. Mr. Elias, do you have any other thoughts?
I just want to emphasize two points. The first is, if you look at the breadth of the way in which the Commission has addressed these kinds of questions, going back as far back as the Carter-Mondale opinion in the 80s, as recently as the Carnahan opinion a few weeks ago, which was unanimously adopted 6-0, and which actually involved soft money, right? Actually did not involve accounts raised subject to the limits, prohibitions, or reporting requirements of the Act. This was actually intended to be a much, much, much more modest request, and frankly did not wade into a more, what I thought would be, difficult question for the Commission about whether or not a separate limit could be used with a separate account for legal defense fund purposes. Here you have the party committees, frankly, using an account that is already federal money, that is already permitted, is already a reporting account, for the purposes of litigation that is decidedly not in connection with the federal election. Indeed, the Janvey litigation, as you point out, since it involved predominantly non-federal money, was decidedly not in connection with the federal election. The money that was the bulk of the money at issue involved money that wouldn't be spent in connection with the federal election, but in connection with state elections. So I guess my comment on draft B versus draft A, other than supporting draft A in its entirety versus draft B, is that we live in a world in which the campaign finance laws are under attack from unregulated, and I'm not. And by the way, I realize there's not going to be a unanimity among the testifiers or the commission on this. For folks who believe in the campaign finance laws working and the hard money system working, this is a modest proposal that helps make this system work, much in the same way that the commission preserved the public financing of the presidential election system for years and years by providing GLAC as a vehicle to allow that system to work. And honestly, what we're asking for is to use a form of federal money that already exists in the system to pay for what is predominantly litigation over non-federal matters. And it's just, if you can't do that, we wind up in a place that I think actually will not. The next steps around this won't be. I think those are good reasons to support draft A.
The other thought I had is that draft B characterizes, we'll call it the Frank and AO and previous as an exception to Bicker, but it's not. It's wholly consistent with Bicker. That's why it's there. It's not really a form of soft money, right? I mean, it's as you just said, it's money raised subject to the limits and prohibitions. It's just a different kind of account, I suppose. But it's not. I mean, what the commission has done before in this area is not an exception to McCain-Feingold. It's consistent with McCain-Feingold. Right.
Yes, and I believe, and I'm looking for the site. I believe the commission has previously described those funds as federal money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not. The commission has never suggested that those are non-federal or soft money funds.
The reason why I'm fishing around for the hook to a candidate is draft B also raises the idea of candidate contribution limits, and I don't really follow that. And maybe someone else can explain that at some point that somehow recounts are similar to runoffs, so there's another limit and that kind of thing. But parties have yearly limits. So this whole contribution limit per election thing seems to me to be a straw man that has nothing to do with anything in this case, right? I mean, that's my point. There's just no candidate hook here.
I think that's right, Commissioner, and party committees don't have separate runoff limits, unlike candidate committees. I think that's right.
Yeah.
In fact, I believe there was a case, in order to perhaps undermine the bipartisan spirit of the testimony, I believe that there was a case in the early
90s. I think I did that out of the gate.
Where the National Republican Senatorial Committee argued that there actually would be a separate 441AD limit in connection with a runoff Senate election, and was found to be an error in that belief by the commission. So I think the commission precedent on that is.
As a policy matter, what gets tough is you could get sued, and then you're using your hard money to defend a lawsuit. This is still hard money, but it's essentially a different kind of hard money. Now, this is tough to swallow, because when folks give money to party committees, not that some of my colleagues really get concerned about what the donors think. And I don't put as much emphasis as on, but I still put some emphasis on it. No one gives money to party committees to pay lawyers to defend lawsuits. I mean, if they give it to GLAC, they know that's where it's going. But generally, they think it's going to go to contact voters, right? I mean, the money people give to parties is really supposed to go to voter contact. And all of a sudden, now the money they give for what they think is going to be voter contact has to defend lawsuits. Maybe that's just the price of being in business, but then the federal government's telling you you have a limited amount of money you can raise to even defend yourself. Someone can put your lights out very easily with the right kind of lawsuit. And as a policy matter, that can't be what McCain-Feingold was intended to do.
Well, I think, Commissioner, it makes it harder for the national parties to operate in an entirely hard dollar world if that's the reality, and that the funds that we're talking about here cannot be used for campaign activities and voter contact, as you put it. And instead, the goal would be to use these funds exclusively for the payment of these legal expenses that I think everyone agrees have no relationship to what happens on election day, have no relationship to candidate contact, voter contact.
Right. Because, and therefore, it's not being used to benefit any particular candidate. So if you take it through the McConnell lens, you're not raising the issues that the court agreed with the need to impose all kinds of new limits. To me, draft A is wholly consistent with the commission's already done, and I think that's the correct approach. And I'm curious to hear where other folks are on this, and to the extent their support for draft B. It seems to me that given the road the commission has already gone down, it's a heavy burden to justify deviating from that road. Maybe there's a third road that I haven't seen, but it seems to me that the fork in the road was taken long ago. Final point is there is some legislative history that I think helps you here indirectly. Recall Senator McCain, in the context of leadership PACs, said you could raise $5,000 for the federal account, $5,000 for the, I guess, the non-federal account, but it's like the pseudo-federal non-federal account. And the commission in the rulemaking said, no, you can't, but that's due to the solicitation rule, right? That wasn't due to the national party. Statute's different for national parties. It seemed to me the logic that Senator McCain was using there should apply perhaps to the national parties. I wouldn't go so far as to say it allows you to create non-federal accounts, because you're not asking for that. That's not what this is. But it seems to me the principal sponsor of the law didn't see bites at the apple as only one bite only per entity. Now, the solicitation rule got in the way of where he thought he was going, and that's a different question than this. Do you think that legislative history helps you?
I think it does. I think it reflects the practical realities of operating under the McCain-Feingold law, and it's basically the author, co-author of the legislation, talking about these issues. And I think I do think it goes to the point that all the dollars that we're talking about here are federally permissible funds, and no effort here to inject any soft money funds into the system. Instead, an effort to have this category of funds that's already been identified, by the commission over the years that have historically been used for activities that are not for the purpose of influencing a federal election, to also be able to be used for these types of litigation expenses.
And they're expenses that, not in your case, but in Mr. Elias's case, are being used to essentially vindicate the reach of the act through a preemption argument. So you're, privately financing an argument that is vindicating the reach of McCain-Feingold as really the sole way for a national party to dispose of its non-federal money, right? You have two ways. It either goes back to the actual contributor or it goes to the U.S. Treasury. Even giving it to charity, that's not on the list, right? So a state law says, well, we want the money to go to somebody else. That runs counter to federal law. Now you're having to fund that with money that contributors have given, thinking is for direct voter contact. Now, before McCain-Feingold, there were legal defense funds. There's nothing in the legislative history, there's certainly nothing in the text of McCain-Feingold, nothing in the legislative history of McCain-Feingold that I'm aware of that says that's done away with. In fact, the commission said, I guess in Majette there isn't. The commission's already crossed that bridge.
Yeah.
That's not a question. It's just an observation. So with that, I'll yield back, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My colleague sometimes describes what happens at this table as kabuki theater, and I think that might be a good description for what's going on today. I don't fault anybody for it, but when a proponent of the yes answer asks the requester, who obviously is seeking for a yes answer, are there any facts that would support a no answer, it's not very surprising that the witnesses sit there and they say, nope, can't think of any. I don't fault you for it, but, let's be a little bit real here.
But if I could, that's not what I asked. I asked them for facts to distinguish.
No, you asked them if there were any facts that would support,
Franken, that support
draft B. And, of course, they couldn't think of any. So, you know, that's fine.
I asked counsel about B. I was asking them to support A on the facts. I didn't ask about I didn't ask them to support B.
Can I continue now?
Sure. That wasn't on the Kabuki script, I suppose.
Okay. So here's the issue for me. And I think this is a very hard request because you have very sympathetic facts because this lawsuit does go back to pre-BCRA soft money. And they're trying to, you know, get back their pre-BCRA soft money, which you don't have. And some hard money, and I appreciate the frankness on that. But, you know, that's why this is a particularly sympathetic case. But, you know, if you go back to the statute says that a national committee of a party, a political party, may not solicit, receive, or direct to another person, a contribution, donation, or transfer funds, or any other thing of value, or spend any funds that are not subject to the limitations, prohibitions, and reporting requirements of this act. And it doesn't say in connection with an election. It just says you can't raise, post McCain-Feingold, you can't raise or spend anything that's not subject to all the limitations of the act, including the limitation of how much money people can give the party committees, how much individuals can give, which this year is, we just did our inflation adjustment, it's $30,800. Now, I agree that, you know, we have gone down, partway down a road, particularly in the recount context, where we have said, you know, and it was partly a pragmatic approach, recognizing that recounts always happen, by definition, at the end of a hotly contested election where people will have spent all their money. So then what are they supposed to do when they go into the recount and they need more money in a hurry to pay for the recount? And it was in part trying to accommodate that need. And it was in part, you know, drawing on the long history of commission actions that treat recounts differently than other funds. So, yeah, we have started down that road, and maybe we shouldn't have. Maybe we should have stuck with a pure reading of the section of the law that I just read, 441IA, and said, nope, sorry, you're stuck even in the recount situation. You can only raise or spend hard money subject to one limit. Because you describe it as hard money, and it is sort of hard money, but it's a little bit squishy because we gave you this extra limit. You know, so you get basically an extra pot of money for your recount expenses. So then the question is, you know, having done that, can we ever draw the line on any other kind of expenses that you can use that money for, or are we, you know, inevitably, you know, rolling down that hill? And I bear in mind that, 95-25 seemed like a good idea at the time. That was an AO that the commission issued many years ago before even I was here. You know, at the time, people thought it was a reasonable accommodation, and it led to soft money and what turned, you know, I'm sure it was originally seen as a limited exception, but it turned into an explosion of soft money that subsequently Congress decided needed to be addressed. So I am mindful of that and concerned that we not go down a road where we say we can never draw a line so that we end up, you know, what my concern is that where we're going to end up at the end of the day is if we say yes today to you, then there will be other requests, right? I mean, one thing we know about you, Mr. Elias, is you love to make requests. And I say that with the utmost respect and affection for your distinguished career. There will be other requests. And if we say yes today, you know, can we draw the line on the next one? Because we will be faced with the same argument next time. It's like, well, you said yes last time, so why don't you say yes to this, and why don't you say yes to this? And before you know it, I think where we're going to end up is a situation where we have effectively doubled the contribution limits to party committees, because you'll have two pots of money. You'll have one pot of money that you use for what used to be hard money expenses, and you'll have another pot of money that you use for what used to be soft money expenses, the things that you say are not actually in connection with an election, sort of, you know, any number of expenses that, and I'm sure the argument will be made that anything that doesn't involve express advocacy could, you know, fall into that pot. And it will be subject to other source restrictions and other limits, but it's still an extra pot of money. It's an extra limit that is not provided for in the statute. And I think we just have to draw the line somewhere, or that's where we're going to end up. And I think that there is a defensible line to be drawn saying, you know, yes, you can do recounts. Carnahan has been brought up, but as we discussed explicitly at the table, you did not ask and we did not address the issue of federal candidates and office holders' activity in connection with that fund, and Ms. Carnahan is no longer a federal candidate or office holder. So that was a little bit different. That didn't really, you know, we're not talking about candidates here, but I don't think we were talking about candidates there either. The question is, you know, and I think, you know, we could be criticized either way. You know, we could be criticized for drawing the line here. You know, some will say, you know, well, why draw that line here? If you didn't draw the line there, then you're sort of committed to this path and you have to continue rolling down that hill. I think we could also be criticized, maybe not on this decision, but ultimately for opening the door to, you know, basically a doubling of the contribution limit that, you know, just has no end in sight. And ironically, you know, if you want to double the contribution limit, it's your clients that could do that. It's, you know, you come, we've got a request here from all the congressional campaign committees representing all the members of Congress. And if all the members of Congress agree that the party committees need more money, obviously they can do that. They can fix that in the big white building down the street with a dome on top. My concern is that I think it's above my pay grade to make that decision for them. And even though this seems like a really reasonable request, and I'm, you know, and I thought about, I mean, I can't support draft A because it's a little bit too broad for my tastes. But, you know, I thought about whether there was some way to craft an answer that said, you know, yes, you can use this pot of money that you've already raised subject to prior advisory opinions to fund litigation that addresses soft money arising, you know, the genesis of the lawsuit is pre-BICRA. You know, I thought about whether that one could carve out, you know, a little exception, you know, that just sort of put a little bump on top of the recount circle that we've already drawn. And, you know, I thought about it, but again, I'm you're going to come in again and the next one's going to sound really sympathetic too, and I just don't know how we, you know, at a certain point, I think it becomes harder and harder with every case to say no. Once we say yes, you know, we're already faced with a situation where the argument is being made. And I think it's a credible argument. I don't fault you for asking the question. I think it's a reasonable question. I think reasonable people could disagree on this. I just think that we need to draw the line somewhere, or we're going to find ourselves, you know, rolling down to the bottom of a hill where, you know, people will then turn around and look back and say, well, how did that happen? How did they get all the way down that hill to where we've effectively doubled the contribution limit for party committees, which on a policy basis as might be a perfectly fine idea, but as I said, I don't think it's a decision that I can make. So I think that is my concern. That's why I can't support draft A. And while I'm tempted to see if there would be something we could cobble together, although my experience is that in our trying to cobble together answers that, you know, are not as broad as what my colleagues want, is that that hasn't been terribly successful in the past. So, I can't say that I've tried in this instance, but I can't say that I'd be terribly optimistic about the results if I did try. In order to just get you guys a yes here today and then try and somehow limit it so that it wouldn't lead to another request and another request and another request. I think this is, like I said, I don't fault you for asking. I think this is a tough question, and reasonable people could come to different conclusions based on what the commission has done before, but that's why I cannot today support draft A.
Further comment? Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to get the opinion of Mr. Elias and Mr. Toner on this concern about basically a snowball argument that, we opened up a door with a Frank and AO that we've chosen to go down a certain path. And this concern that somehow, if we approve this, that this is going to now snowball and we're going to effectively create non-federal accounts. That's specifically in draft B, saying that we may have non-federal accounts that effectively double Bickers limitations. Just wanted to get your thoughts about how pressing of a concern that really is in reality.
Well, let me answer it this way. First, just as a historical matter, the original creation of this architecture was not the Frankeneo. It was actually one before that, where I came with the NRSC's general counsel and did not seek a separate account. We did not seek a separate account. We actually sought a different way around this issue, and it was the commission that voted that indeed you could raise a separate account at a national party committee and have it be within the source restrictions, amount limitations, and reporting requirements of the Act. So in some respect, and I know some of you, Commissioner Walther, I remember specifically you in the context of the redistricting trust AO, have commented that there may be results that you will support that you would not have supported 3 or 4 advisory opinions ago. But nevertheless, those are the precedent, and that is the architecture. At this point, this commission is 4 or 5 advisory opinions deep into this architecture. So let me say that as point one. Point two, before we worry too much about the doubling of the contribution limits, the reality of it is this is all being used in one form or another, even in its broadest snowball iteration, is being used to pay lawyers. And I promise you there is a limited appetite on the part of clients to raise money to pay lawyers for anything. So I think that rather than viewing this as 1995-25, I would suggest a much more applicable analogy would be GLAC, where the campaigns were allowed a separate limit to raise for a modest amount of legal work to make the system work, not to undermine the system, not to create loopholes in the system, but to actually make the system work. And for anyone looking in the Orange Book, you will not see GLAC. GLAC was entirely a creation of the Federal Election Commission. There is no statutory authority for GLAC. It is other than the general authority of the commission to interpret its own rules and make its own rules and interpret its statute. So I think that you're, I think, much further down this road than is suggested by citing Franken. And number two, I don't think it undermines the statute. And the third point I just want to make, with all due respect, and I do tremendously respect all the commissioners and their views on this subject, to me the analogous advisory opinion is not 1995-25, and it's not Franken. It's Emily's List. Emily's List came before this commission and asked a very modest request, very modest. If we want to raise money for non-federal candidates using a federal office holder as a signer of mail, not in their own state or in their own district, can we pay for that using a mixture of hard and soft money? And the commission said no, because if a federal candidate signed the mail, it has to be 100% federal money. I believe you may have actually been on the commission for that. What resulted was a lawsuit that didn't strike down that regulation in its narrow iteration, but which struck down did a lot more damage for folks who are trying to keep the campaign finance system intact. And I think the fact is the commission is given the authority. On the one hand, I am very sympathetic to the argument that commissioners make that your job is not to replace Congress, and that is absolutely right. Your job is not to replace Congress, not to replace the courts. On the other hand, your job is to administer a statute that was written 30 plus years ago, 40 plus years ago, in a way that makes the statute work. And that's why you're appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. It's to allow you to interpret statutes that don't speak to every question and every evolution of politics and have this statute work in the current system. It is where this commission, whether it is the initial advisory opinion request denied to Citizens United, whether it is the initial advisory opinion request denied to Emily's List, it is where this commission has taken candidly rigid interpretations that do not evolve in what is the media, what is the allocation required post-McCain-Feingold, where this commission has frankly, I think, failed and wound up in bad places with the courts. So my own view is that this is a very, very modest proposal. We are not looking to double the contribution limit and create soft money. We're not looking to recreate issue ads in 1995-25. What we are looking to do is to take an account that this commission created on its own, not at the request of the requesters, several advisory opinions, and say that in the context of a case that involves non-federal money, that we should not have to spend federal money. We're prepared to spend federal money. We're not sure we have to spend out of the normal federal account, but we should be able to spend out of a equally limited, equally reporting, equally source-restricted account to pay those expenses. And it seems to me that those fears are just are with. And I have, like I said, a tremendous respect for the commission and for the concerns that you raised. I just think they're not well-founded in this case.
And if I may, Commissioner, sure. Just a couple follow-up points. I think this is an important issue. And Commissioner Weintraub, I appreciate you fleshing this out, because I think it's important. And I think the two things that really stand out for me is that if our requests were granted, there would be no funds raised and spent that are from prohibited sources, corporate and labor union contributions. That's important, unlike the soft money days of the 1980s and the 1990s. But then I think the second point, and Commissioner Weintraub, I think this goes to your point. I remember when I was on the other side of the dais, it was a little bit more comfortable, by the way, on the other side of the dais. Those chairs are just lovely and kind of settle in.
Come on back.
not that these chairs are uncomfortable, but it's a little bit of a different role. But I think, Commissioner, as I understand the crux of your argument is, if this advisory opinion is granted today, and 3 years from now we'll have a national committee running a television ad brought to you by recount funds, that won't have express advocacy and it'll be very carefully lawyered and all the rest of it. And I respect that concern, but I think what I think is really important that I'm going to try to emphasize is that the expenses that we're talking about today and that were talked about in the recount. AOs are not part of any television campaign, not part of any issue advertising, not part of voter contact, not part of candidate recruitment and training and trying to elect candidates, but instead are utterly divorced from those political purposes, and instead are focused on expenses that have nothing to do with who wins and loses on election day. Unlike hard-hitting issue advertising and voter contact and get-out-the-vote drives and all the other things that, whether they have express advocacy or not, can be very effective. So what I think is important to emphasize is that what we're seeking here is the ability, as Mr. Elias, I think, pointed out very well, the ability consistent with the hard dollar world for the national committees to defray these kinds of expenses. And there's no risk, if you were to grant our opinion, that these types of expenses would bleed over into political activities, campaign-related activities that we've seen in the past.
I'm just going to add my two cents about where I am. I'm with draft A. I would grant the requesters the request. I look at this as a fairly easy an easy yes under the logic of our previous AOs. I mean, unlike the Franken AO, where we clearly had as we said in the reasoning of that, we had costs associated with recounts and contests, which we said are in connection with an election, in connection with a federal election, but they're not expenditures because they're not for the purpose of influencing an election. Here we have expenses related to a legal case, which those costs are not expenditures, and it clearly is not in connection with a federal election. So this seems to be the easier case in terms of how these funds should be used. As requester pointed out, a new pot of money is not being proposed to be created. As Commissioner McGann pointed out, I think that would be an interesting question. And now that we've gone down the road of saying extra pots can, so long as they're subject to the contribution limits, the source restrictions, and reporting requirements, can another pot be created? I think that's an interesting question for another day. But that's not even happening here. These are funds that have already been raised under that. They're not going to be used to influence elections, according to the representations of the requester. And I think, and I hear Commissioner Weintraub's, you know, statement about how recounts are common, and so there was a pragmatic decision in starting in 06 to create this extra account because contests and recounts are more common. It would seem that this would be the more sympathetic case where, I mean, if recounts, I mean, if one wanted to argue, you could say recounts and contests, well, that's something that, that parties should plan ahead for. This sort of litigation, which is which popped up that you now have to confront, is how do you anticipate that? And now are you going to have to bleed hard dollars in order to defend yourself against this sort of a case? So it seems to me that this is actually the much more uncommon case, as you pointed in your comments to that you submitted in response to the draft. So, to me, I support draft A. Again, I find that it's fully consistent with what where the commission has gone, and I think actually to say no would be would represent a stark turn from the direction we've been headed over a number of advisory opinions. And I'd also add that in this particular context, that costs associated with litigation, you know, whether in the in the context of legal defense funds, that has a long history as well about how those costs are to be viewed. Those have clearly over several advisory opinions been viewed as those aren't expenditures. The commission has dealt with that, so we're not really breaking new ground here. I think this is fully consistent with how the commission has been going, and for that reason, I'm perfectly comfortable supporting draft A.
Vice Chair Hunter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, will be supporting draft A, and unlike you, Mr. Elias, for me, the fund did start in the Franken AO. That was a lot of fun, and that was the one where I proposed draft C, which cited the provision that Commissioner Weintraub read a little while ago. And I didn't think that the law allowed us to do what we ended up doing in the Franken AO. But I was in part, you know, nobody ever read that section of the statute to me then. And when Al Franken needed extra money, it was fine. And even oh, okay. I forgot about that. So Commissioner Weintraub was recused. I remember you're sitting at the front row, I think right next to Elias. Were you invited to the table back then, or you were just...
I certainly hope so.
I can't remember.
I don't believe so.
Okay. So, anyway, but part of the reason that I approved... Oh, it was before the policy. Got it. Part of the reason that I supported draft A was because there were no comments submitted by the public that said that was impermissible under BCRA, even though I originally thought that it was. And one of the comments that I have in front of me now from Fred Wertheimer, Jerry Hebert, and Paul Ryan even said, "We reluctantly endorse draft A." I was very surprised when we received that, but I figured, well, if they're saying it's okay under BCRA, then it must be. So I was willing to vote for it then. And I also don't recall in any of the conversations that we had on that issue anybody saying that recounts are special, and that's the reason that we're approving this. I understand there's a reg on recounts, and there was some to and fro on that, but I don't remember anybody saying that's the reason that we're supporting it, is because recounts happen a lot, and they're special, and all that kind of stuff. So for the same reasons that Commissioner Peterson said, you know, I supported a one-way path down the road, and maybe it wasn't the right one, but I don't think any of our reasoning in any of the previous AOs that have been cited allows for us to take a different position in this case. Thank you.
From my perspective, I do think this starts with 2006, the AO. And Mr. Elias, I know you have a scheduling matter.
I apologize. If I can swap out with Mr. Swoboda.
Mr. Swoboda, please join us.
I apologize.
I'll note that you're leaving the room just as I begin to explain my rationale.
But we have the equally distinguished Mr.
Equally
Swoboda.
Equally distinguished. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Swoboda.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
In 2006-24, the request came in from a party committee and a candidate committee, and the commission, in determining that the candidates committee could raise a separate limit, noted that for these purposes, a recount is similar to a runoff election, which is also subject to contribution limits, separate from the general election contribution limits. And so I hear that party committees are different, but this is where we start. This is where this runoff or recount, the recount line starts. And I think it's important to understand where we were to figure out where we've been, to figure out where we can go. And that noted with respect to the party that the party would have to use hard money limits. So there was no question after 2006 with respect to that. In 2009, in the Franken request, it also dealt with a particular candidate's recount and election contest. But again, the commission, citing back to 2006, relying on that rationale, noted that this is like a runoff. It seemed to me fundamentally unfair to suggest to a candidate who had to finish an election either through a recount or an election contest that you wouldn't be allowed to have another limit. I think this is all an exception to the broad prohibition on raising money outside of the limits. And I note, again, in 2010-14, we addressed the issue of this recount fund. And while I guess we didn't, because it wasn't before us, the commission did not consider what other things might be funded with this recount money. In 2010-14, we did approve the payment of activities related to a recount that might be in preparation for that. So money could be spent prior to an election for purposes related to the recount. So while I agree that these opinions did not state explicitly that, and therefore no other activity might be considered, I think we didn't need to because that wasn't before us. And what we were doing is creating a narrow carve-out for recounts. And that's where I'm left, and that's where I'm sort of stuck. And I hear the argument about, you know, contributors to party committees are expecting the party committees to do lots of voter contact and encouraging their candidates. But, of course, party committees also do other things that contributors don't always think about. You know, I don't give my money to a party committee hoping they'll pay the rent with it. You know, there are obviously other expenses that have to be undertaken. And so this litigation seems to be, you know, fall into that camp. And I, you know, I agree. It is sympathetic, and it seems, you know, sort of out of the blue, and I imagine it's frustrating to have to deal with this at this point in time for these committees. But that can't get me over the hurdle of what we have is a blanket prohibition, and parties are different. And in certain circumstances, we have said, with respect to recounts, that parties could raise another limit. But just because we said it in recounts, I can't take the next step of saying, and so therefore anything else that might not be related to campaigning for, you know, supporting a particular candidate for office. And I would also note in 2010-14, the recent one with respect to being able to use recount funds before an election, the DSCC noted that it would the recount solicitations would state the purpose of the fund. So it seems to me that, you know, this argument about what do contributors really know with respect to the recount funds, at least in with respect to 2014, there was some understanding that they would be told that it would be for the recount. And again, not that, you know, contributors have to have a specific thing in mind, because I think it's impossible to sort of understand why, you know, what every contributor means, and that would be an impossible task for parties, I think. So that's why I can't support draft A, and I'll plan on supporting draft B. Are there any other comments from commissioners? Commissioner Walther?
I had a couple of questions. I'm in the B camp for the most part, and let me just ask you a couple of questions on it. I'm concerned about trying to figure out a way to make it work and then not finding ourselves trying to make it not work down the line. It's just a big issue for me. And when do we actually, you know, decide that at some point there needs to either be a decision fairly quickly that this is it, or we're just creating a new pot. And so I don't know quite how to do that. There's some sympathy to me with the fact, well, okay, the funds are already there, and what are we going to do with them? And should they go to the Treasury, and should they go to this to preserve the interests of the party, and in theory, the funds that they raised but and I have sympathy, and I just want to say that now for the position the parties are in the aftermath of Citizens United. Again, we're looking at different points of view here, but the parties now, you're just a hard money operation, and it makes it very difficult at this time to get it done. And I'm sympathetic to that. And for that reason, I would like to, I mean, certainly I would not, you know, legislation is really where it needs to take place. I don't really think we're here to legislate. That's not the idea. And I think we did legislate to create the pot that exists now for recounts. We just pulled it out of wherever we decided to pull it. There's different definitions for where that came from. But, you know, did we have the jurisdiction to do that? How can we really enforce it? I mean, I think there's still questions out there about that. But to expand on it would take a pretty good argument for me. And here for litigation, and putting aside a concern I always have, too, is what the expectancies of the donor have. Okay, we're going to do it for recount. That's to preserve the candidates that we figure we want to preserve their opportunity to make sure that a recount gets done right, and in theory, if done right, will prevail. Here we have a piece of litigation where, I don't know how to characterize it in terms of what the merits are, but there's going to be another piece of litigation coming along the pike, and where would we reasonably ever draw the line between the litigation here and a litigation somewhere else? What if it were litigation for entirely unrelated reasons, or maybe the defalcations of some of the people involved in the party? And I know we get criticized for allowing personal use, money spent for personal use to defend politicians who have then needed money to defend themselves for things that people don't think they wanted their money spent for. So that's always a concern to me. It's like trust money in a way. Here, in this litigation, I don't see where we can cabinet in and have that rationale stick. And that's the hard thing for me. And I'd like to be able to consider a way to do it, but I just don't really think. I just don't see how we can do that. I mean, I'm willing to hear what you have to say.
Commissioner, I think this is an important issue. And as I understand, your concern is a dividing line, a bright line that's understandable in terms of the range of expenses that these types of funds can be used for, as opposed to the potential for a slippery slope situation developing. I think there's a couple of frameworks that the Commission could adopt to safeguard the use of these funds if the Commission were to grant the advisory opinion. One, I think we've talked about a little bit earlier, would be to make clear that none of these funds be used for expenditures under the Act. I think that's one first step. I think a next step would be none of the funds be used for federal election activities, FEA. That's obviously a core concept in the McCain-Feingold law, and one that there's detailed regulations on, and would safeguard the fact that these funds wouldn't be used for get-out-the-vote efforts within the meaning of FEA and voter identification and voter registration and the things that really Congress has recognized have a significant impact on Election Day. I think those tools would be available to cabin off this opinion. I understand your key concern there, and I think our effort would be in coming here today to try to have that kind of construct that's understandable for everybody. But I'll defer to Mr. Swoboda on his comments.
Well, Commissioner, I think your concerns are well taken, and I would propose to address them in this way. The first, and I think all understand this, or at least I've heard people indicate understanding of this at the table. We're not asking for permission today to raise a dollar that we cannot raise legally today. The amount that we raise will be no different tomorrow, whether you issue draft A or draft B. We are allowed to raise what we are allowed to raise under the Commission's existing opinions. So then you get to the question of what types of funds are these? Are these federal funds or are these non-federal funds, as draft B suggests that they may be? And the Commission was explicit about this in Advisory Opinion 2000. 2009-4, it said that they were federal funds. As a condition of allowing us to raise these funds, which we are allowed to raise today, it said that they had to be within the limits, the reporting requirements, and the source restrictions of the Act. So that leads you then, I guess, to the real question, which I think is your concern, if I hear you correctly, and Commissioner Weintraub's and Commissioner Bowerly's, if I hear you correctly, which is, how do we see then that the integrity of the limits are preserved so that these funds are not spent impermissibly to influence federal elections? In other words, if the premise on which we allowed you to raise this money, which we will be able to raise tomorrow, is that it's not to spend to be spent to influence a federal election, then how do we make sure that the funds are not going to be used to, in fact, influence a federal election? And the common thread you have here between this and the other recount litigation expenses, it goes to something Mr. Elias said a little earlier, is that it all relates to litigation. I mean, we proposed and were authorized to pay in the early opinions for expenses relating to recount litigation and other recount related expenses beside. We are proposing here today solely to pay for defensive litigation expenses, which the Commission consistently over 30 years has said is not an expenditure for the purpose of influencing a federal election. So if the Commission goes there and focuses on the litigation nature of the expense, then I think that's how you stop the slippery slope that, for example, Commissioner Weintraub was worried about with Advisory Opinion 1995-25, because that's the whole story in your view of 95-25, what I imagine. Isn't it that we were that sometime back in the day the Republican National Committee was proposing to pay for something that had ostensibly not an election influencing purpose, but in later practice by others it proved that it did? That's not a risk here. We're asking solely to pay lawyers to defend a discrete piece of litigation that's utterly ahistorical in the history of our relationships with our clients. I mean, we had, at the end of the 2010 cycle, the possibility of between 10 to 15 recounts at the House of Representatives level. In other words, there were 10 to 15 races the day after Election Day where the outcome was unknown and there were canvassing and counting and certification processes to be followed. This is the only time in 13 years representing a national party committee that we've been sued to return non-federal money in a Ponzi scheme. So I think the litigation character of the expense is what perhaps helps you get to where you need to go and to cabin that so that you do, in fact, what you've acknowledged that you needed to do in the prior advisory opinions, which is to cabin these funds against an election influencing purpose.
But in we could make that argument, I guess. I'm not convinced that that's the argument that would work, but suppose you do that and the next thing people want litigation for, you'll say none. Purposes that don't relate to influencing an election. You want to raise money for that. And could that be a litigation to defend a problem with breach of contract over your building? Could it be, and could it be just money to build a building? I mean, granted, it wouldn't be to influence an election, but at what point do we have a reasonable basis? I know we can distinguish it, but can we be reasonably... Can we do it with a rationale that will stick? And that's where I'm stuck, because I can't feel comfortable that we're not going to be, and I don't blame anybody for coming here and asking, because you got to do it. And obviously you have us really mulling this thing over, but it's a concern.
I think Commissioner Wall, you make a good point. I think, for example, you mentioned if these types of funds could be used to pay for rent or overhead expenses, that essentially would subsidize political activities by the national committees as opposed to the payment of litigation expenses in a defensive litigation posture that the national committees, they weren't looking for this litigation. This wasn't something that they were seeking to achieve. They're trying to cope with it, as opposed to using these dollars to pay rent and salaries and things that can free up dollars for political purposes.
And to add one more point on that, Commissioner, the Commission historically has distinguished between offensive and defensive litigation expenses. And there's a logic to that. In this case, this has entirely been thrust upon our clients.
I don't know if I'd want to get into the pros and cons of, because certainly if you can use it for litigation, sometimes to assert it to protect a particular right isn't necessarily all bad. I mean, you may initiate a recount. There's various things to or initiate something to protect a position. But I just want to let you know that that's the problem I have. I just don't know quite how to do it under the circumstances.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems like there's a couple of constructs that you guys are suggesting, and I understand that you're, you know, it's like, what is it? How about this? How about that? You're trying to give us something that you think might work for somebody, looking for another vote, you know, seeing if you can make a sale. I get it. I hear it. Don't blame you. But it seems like there's a couple of different avenues that you have suggested, one of which is broader than the other. One of which I think raises more concerns for me, because it sounds a little bit more like, you know, the road to the soft money analogy. And that is, you know, well, as long as it's not used for federal election activity, or as long as it's not used for expenditures. I mean, the expenditure argument, you know, if we're going to have to figure out whether every single expense involves express advocacy, I'm not going down that road. You know, the narrower approach, and I don't think that's the way they wrote the law, is the problem. They didn't say in the law federal national parties can't raise or spend soft money for, you know, in connection with an election or for the purpose of influencing election. They just said you can't raise or spend soft money. And I think the argument of, you know, maybe we should never have gone down the road of creating these separate recount funds, and I have to bear some responsibility for this because I think I'm the only commissioner at the table who was here in 2006, and I was heavily involved in that in that AO. You know, but then the question is, can we ever draw the line having started down that road? And some of what I've heard from my colleagues really strengthens my concern, you know, because they're already saying, well, you know, we've got five advisory opinions, now we can never say no, because we've already issued five advisory opinions saying yes. So, I mean, I just, you know, so I can see that certainly in the view of my colleagues, I don't think there is really much of a limiting principle. Now, when it comes to litigation, you know, which has also been suggested, well, this is just money to pay lawyers. This is just for litigation purposes. But really, national parties are involved in all kinds of lawyer-like expenses all the time. Of course they have lawyers. They know they have lawyers, and they have to pay their lawyers. You know, this is a, you know, yeah, maybe you can get a certain amount of volunteer, but if you want folks like you, the national party committees are going to have to pay for it. And when, in all fairness, when BICRA passed, and I know, Mr. Toner, you know, your clients weren't big supporters of BICRA, but Mr. Swoboda, your clients were, do you really think they had it in their mind when they wrote this law that it wasn't going to, you know, that there was some exemption for legal expenses, that it meant, you know, you can't raise or spend soft money except to pay for your lawyers? You can't raise or spend money outside of these limits. I mean, because I, you know, I don't want to suggest that this is soft money. It's sort of squishy money. It's not quite soft. It's not quite hard. Do you really think the people who voted for BICRA thought that they were voting for a law that said you can't raise or spend money outside, the national party committees not raise or spend money outside of these limits except for the money they used to pay their lawyers? You really think that's what they had in mind?
Well, Commissioner, to respond and be perfectly candid, I think when BICRA was passed, it was not at all clear that entities regulated by BICRA would be subject to those financing restrictions for example, recount expenses or, for example, legal defense trust expenses. And I think that was why you saw an initial flurry of back and forth in the rulemakings over BICRA, where the parties were saying these ought not be captured by the statute at all. And the reform community was saying, oh, yes, it needs to be captured by the statute. So you saw very early on a surfacing of the ambiguity and a recognition of the fact that Congress didn't speak, you know, very clearly about that at all. And that was what I think set the Commission down the path of the advisory opinions that you've issued over time, for example, with Majette and, for example, with later advisory opinions, where you've basically had to work it out for yourself and figure out how do we make this work within the hard money framework. You bought the initial premise that this was going to occur within the hard money framework, at least as far as the national parties were concerned. The question is, how are we going to make this work? And that goes back to something I think that Mark talked about a little bit ago, which is, if you have the ability to do this, to give the parties the flexibility under the Act as you've interpreted it. And if you have no one else on record before you saying that you shouldn't do it, as is the case here, you have five national party committees asking for this relief and no one before you in opposition, and if there is a way to hedge against what I think is the one real risk here, which is how do you make sure that the integrity of the funds we're already raising is kept from influencing an election. If there's a way to address that, then I guess it begs the question of why not do that. But I think, to be perfectly candid, Congress did not foresee this. And in fact, there were maybe some in Congress who did not foresee that these activities would be regulated to the degree that they are now.
And if I may, Commissioner, I think a couple things I think stand out for me. One is that I think it is a positive thing that no one has challenged the recount fund AOs, you know, this pot of money that was identified in 2006. I think that's important. And I think, Commissioner Weintraub, you emphasized sort of the pragmatic, the practical concerns that helped drive that decision. And the fact that, you know, this has been on the books for some years and there's been no effort to overturn that effort. And the other thing is that in terms of the safeguards that you could choose to put in an advisory opinion if you were to grant it, you know, earlier I was talking about that there are a number of options that are already well developed in the law that you could draw upon, like the federal, you know, no federal election activity framework or no expenditure framework or no public communications involved here, or as Mr. Swoboda has pointed out, the body of advisory opinions that distinguish between defensive and offensive litigation. You know, these are tools that are all at your disposal that don't require you, I think, Commissioner Walter, you may go to your concern, you know, sort of reinvent the wheel here on the fly with a rationale that you try to construct here at the table. You've got some good building blocks in the existing law that you could use, I think, to safeguard what you're doing here today.
Commissioner Walter?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think it would be hard for us to going down the road, as Commissioner Weintraub said, regardless of what the framers of BCRA intended, because we're all now just have different perspectives on what they probably intended, I guess, to say, okay, we're going to allow an unrestricted fund for a non-federal activity, you know, to take which was this, is to defend a recount fund money without any redesignation and create a new pot for it. It's just like we're going to be able to use this money for anything that doesn't relate to federal activity, communications. If that's what you're thinking, I mean, I don't see that there's enough here to get there on the commission. What I was really looking at was a way to take what we've done and right or wrong and find a reasonable way to consider this that wouldn't come back and bite us in a different way.
You know, well, I think
that's what I'm thinking. I'm not trying to suggest today, okay, now we're going to create a new fund, and that's good. You know, we're calling it a recount fund, but we're going to use it for other things too. That would be something that I don't think there would be an appetite to consider.
I think, Commissioner Walter, what you could do if you felt comfortable doing it is craft an advisory opinion that makes clear that you know, the funds that would be available for these litigation expenses would be the exact funds that are already available under the recount advisory opinion. In other words, no new dollars in the system. I think you could very rightfully emphasize that in the opinion. And I think you could also very rightfully emphasize that these are defensive litigation expenses that relate to this litigation in Texas, and that, you know, the commission's making a judgment that these expenses are like the recount expenses, not for the purpose of influencing an election, and really cabin it off in that fashion. But I think your first point's an important one, and that is that this is not an effort to create a new pot of money or raise any additional dollars, hard dollars, for the committees that doesn't already exist. I think that's important. I think that's where we're united here. We're looking to, you know, spend funds that have already been raised, that already can be raised under the agency's existing precedents.
And Commissioner, I might just add that this is actually a problem that the Commission has had to confront before and has solved rather successfully with GLAC funds and the restrictions on the use of GLAC funds. In fact, what we're asking you to do today is not that dissimilar from what the Kerry campaign, we as Perkins Coie, asked on behalf of the Kerry campaign to do in 2004 when we asked permission for GLAC funds to be used to pay for recount and contest expenses should, heaven forbid, there be a repeat of the Florida experience. And that was something to which the Commission said yes. But in dealing with that and other similar sorts of entreaties to use GLAC funds, the Commission successfully cabined it to what its purpose was at the outset when the Commission created it, which in that case was a pool of funds available exclusively to ensure legal compliance with the Act. By the way, for a category of committees that were restricted even tighter than these committees at the table are today, committees that were otherwise barred from raising anything privately for themselves.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make one comment about a comment that's come up a couple of times as to whether, you know, I appreciate that you haven't asked for another pot of money. It's been suggested that, you know, that would be an interesting question. I think one of my colleagues suggested that he'd probably favor it, and another one said, well, that would be an interesting question. And I just want to note that whether we could continue to, you know, create more and more pots of money has, in at least one context, already been raised to the Commission, and that was in the Franken AO, where the request was, you know, could we have a recount fund and could we have an election contest fund? And in that context, the Commission deadlocked on whether an election contest fund could be created in addition. Now, I was not at the table for that. As I've said, I was recused. However, I will state for the record that I agree with that particular conclusion that, you know, you can't just keep creating new pots of money. Now, I appreciate that you haven't asked that, but I thought since the topic had come up, it was worth noting that it's come up before. And, you know, to the extent that a deadlock answers anything, I think we know, we have a pretty good idea of where the votes with this group of commissioners would lie for extra pots of money. And I think that's why you asked the question the way you did, because you might have foreseen that would have been a difficult question to get four votes on. You look very puzzled, Mr. Swoboda.
No, I'm responding, I guess, to that because we came here with a question that actually, I mean, was not a very Machiavellian question.
We each have
these pools of money. We have these expenses that have been thrust upon it, and we simply wish permission to pay. You know, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
I have one question of clarification. We've been talking a lot about defensive litigation costs and paying lawyers, but I just want to make sure I understand, as I read the request, the committee seek to pay all or some of their legal fees, judgment, or settlement costs arising from the JMB complaint from the recount fund. So were the preemption argument to fail or the judge to order the repayment of these contributions, as I understand the request, you would be asking to pay that judgment or that return of those contributions from this fund as well?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner McGann.
Thank you. Just a couple of final thoughts. One concern has been raised is that a fear of essentially doubling the limits. To me, the horse left that barn long, long ago. It happened in Franken, and the seeds for Franken were. It's correct that Franken is based upon prior AOs, and the seeds of Franken were sown long before anyone came up with the idea for the Franken request, I assume. But the limits essentially were doubled, right? And if you have more than one recount, you're going to raise more money, depending on what cycle you're in and all that kind of thing. So the idea that somehow this is the point to say, well, we can't double the limits, that's already happened. As far as cabining it in, Commissioner Walter makes an interesting point. I wrote down, you can't cabinet it in and have it stick. And I think he's coming at it from the exact opposite direction I'm coming at from this, but I agree with the statement. Because I look at this as we've already gone down a certain road. It was a road that we started going down the we, the official we, not the me, before I got here, right? Because this comes from this 2006 AO, where, as the Democratic Party points out today, they didn't really ask for the answer they got, but the commission gave them this new creature of some sort of a recount fund. You know, if you go back and actually read the AO, you realize that was not a unanimous AO. There was a very powerful dissent in that AO. If I have the right AO, I think it was Von Spakovsky and Toner. And if we were starting on a clean slate, I think that was the correct answer. Some of us felt that was probably the correct answer in Franken, but we felt that because the commission had already gone down a road, the logic of that AO meant the Franken answer was essentially preordained. So if we were on a clean slate, I think we'd be doing a completely different thing in a lot of areas. But we're not. Things build on prior rules, and we're in a situation now where some folks want to draw a line, but to draw that line needs some sort of principle basis, and that's how I take when I heard Commissioner Walther, I wrote it down, because you got to make it stick the other direction. Otherwise, it's an arbitrary line. After all, recounts are a form of litigation. That point was made by the Democratic Party today. There's other parts of recounts. Obviously, you're counting votes and whatnot. But even the notion of defensive-only litigation, recount litigation isn't necessarily purely defensive. Sometimes you go to court for offensive reasons, or just because you want to pick your judge and you get a placeholder before the other guy gets to the courthouse, or you need to preserve the ballot. So that's technically offensive. So even then, even under the recount use of money, it's not just limited to defensive litigation, as I read what the commission has done. If the concern is that the contributors gave money specifically for recounts, I'd be open to some sort of redesignation system. I mean, it's cumbersome. To me, it feels like regulation for the sake of regulation. But if that gets it done, write a letter back to the contributors and say, well, you can use it for more generalized legal. Now, that's costly. I'm hesitant to impose that burden without thinking through the cost. But, you know, the flip side is, if that's the only way to get the yes, well, then maybe that addresses that concern. But I'm still hung up on what seems to be the desire to draw the line in the sand here. I could see down the road drawing a line in the sand. And in my initial comments, I brought up other examples, and I can't think of other examples where this could go off. And as Mr. Toner said, I can't envision TV ads brought to you by, you know, Recount Fund Incorporated, right? I mean, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. I agree that this is much more like the GLAC concept. The specter of 95-25, I don't think fits here. And the mythology that has surrounded that AO is to me not applicable here, because what you are talking about are variants of the same thing. Committees vindicating their rights, right? Whether it is recounts, whether it is when you get sued in under state law, whether it's redistricting. We had an AO somewhat recently, and whether members could raise money for redistricting litigation. That's Voting Rights Act litigation. That's vindicating the rights of voters, right? This is the kind of thing that I think the commission is empowered to do, meaning empowered to make the system work, as the Democratic Party suggested today. So to me, I come back to the burden is on those who want to draw the line, given what's already happened. Now, what I'm not suggesting is, because, and it was sort of thrown out in the straw man version earlier, that, well, because we've done five or six AOs, we can never look back. It'll become anything goes. No one's suggesting that. This is cabined in. And perhaps it's because I'm bringing to the table my view of what this is, and having represented party committees, I understand instinctively what this actually should become. And it should not become some way to backdoor soft money into federal elections. And that's not what it is. In fact, the previous AOs make clear this isn't soft money. Now we're sort of all of a sudden backing off of that, saying, well, it's not really hard money either. It's this squishy in-between money. But the AOs, as drafted, make clear it is a form of federally permissible money. Therefore, by definition, that's hard money. So to me, I think draft A is the answer. I think the burden is on others to explain why the line can be drawn here. Otherwise, coming at it from probably the opposite direction of Commissioner Walther, it's tough to cabin it in and have it stick, because otherwise it really looks arbitrary to me. Others may disagree down the road. Mr. Elias had gone through a litany of AOs where I wholeheartedly agree, when I assume he's speaking for his clients, so therefore I wholeheartedly agree with the Democratic Party on this, that a lot of the AOs in that time period were a little rigid and resulted in all kinds of things, the results of which, well, maybe at the time no one realized, and maybe some of us liked the results, but whether you look at the Emily's list and those sorts of AOs, I think that's a concern here. And of course, he forgot to mention two of my favorite, Speech Now and Unity 08. And Unity 08, you know, puts a new obligation on the commission to think these things through in the AO process. Because here you have a situation where I haven't heard a reason to justify drawing a line other than the need to draw a line. That's not enough to draw a line when you're an administrative agency. So I'm going to support draft A, and hopefully it's going to do whatever it's going to do, and you act accordingly based upon whatever you take to mean, the vote to mean. So that's my position. I just want to state that as to why I am where I am. Thank you.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do not feel under any burden to justify why I vote against Commissioner McGann's point of view. I just kind of reject that whole construct that, you know, it's I have to justify myself if I'm going to disagree with him. I think that, recount funds, I mean, that's what we call them. We call them recount funds. So to cabin them in by saying you can only use them for recounts strikes me as a fairly defensible line that could be drawn. And I understand that other people don't want to draw it that way. I understand that other people don't want to draw much of any lines, but that's okay. You know, we're all entitled to our views on that. I guess, you know, what I'm hearing is a little bit confusing to me as to whether, you know, my colleagues are suggesting or opening the door to looking for some compromise position or not, because I'm kind of hearing on the one hand, no, you can't draw any lines. There's no defensible line that can be drawn. And on the other hand, I'm hearing a little bit about, you know, some interest in seeking a compromise. I have to say, from my perspective, the kind of compromise, and I indicated this earlier, that I might be open to would be a very narrow one that was based on the facts of this case. I'm certainly not interested in drawing the line that says you can use it for anything as long as it's not FIO or expenditures. That's much further than I would be willing to go. Good try. Appreciate the effort. I wouldn't go there. I'm not even sure about, you know, making this into a GLAC. I mean, and just to go back for a second as to whether we've already doubled the contribution limits, I think by limiting the purposes for which the money can be used, that inherently limits how much money you're going to raise for it. So even if you can go out and continue to raise recount funds for the next election, you're going to raise what you think you need for recounts. If you think you can use it for a bunch of other things, then you will raise a bunch more money. So the limits on what we're willing to allow you to spend the money on also limit, you know, whether this is actually going to turn into a doubling of the contribution limits. You're not going to raise as much money into your recount fund as you would raise into your main account, because you're just not going to need that much money. But the more things we let you spend it for, the more money you'll raise. And that's, you know, that's just logic. I guess, you know, where I started with this was, you know, was there some way to issue an opinion that would say, based on the really unusual facts of this case, because it does go back to pre-BCRA days. It really has its origins in the old days before the law was passed. And that, I think, is what makes it such a sympathetic case on the facts. I guess my question for my colleagues is, would there be any interest in attempting a narrow answer here? Or are you only interested in saying, yes, you know, we've already crossed the Rubicon and you can, you know, do whatever you want with this money. Because, I mean, we've had this problem in the past in trying to come up with compromises where we weren't willing to go as far as you were, and then we ended up, you know, sort of crashing and burning. And I don't want to, you know, lead the requesters on and engage in another, you know, week or two of back and forth only to find out that, you know, we can't, you know, there's no realistic prospect of that.
Vice Chair Hunter?
A follow-up to that. Are you saying that you might be willing to approve this request only because it deals with litigation from a situation that happened before BCRA? Is that the line you're suggesting?
Yes, I'm saying it would be what the only thing that I ever considered. And, you know, I hear, you know, I think that both you and Mr. Elias have made very compelling arguments. And as I said, I walked in the door sympathetic on the facts. So, you know, if there was any interest in a narrow yes, you know, maybe we could talk about that further. But like I said, I don't want to lead them down the road if the answer is no, you're really not interested in a narrow answer.
But again, would it be for any litigation that, you know, originated pre-BCRA, not just this one piece of
litigation? No, I think that's right. I think it would have to, you know, it would be unfair to say, you know, this litigation that stems from pre-BCRA days but not other litigation. I think that has an inheriting limiting factor, because I certainly hope you're not going to be faced with a lot more litigation that comes from.
Well, I can think of one right off the bat, a litigation that's ongoing that occurred pre-BCRA that I know at least one of the National Party Committees is dealing with now. But it happened pre-BCRA. It happened in 1981.
I guess we'd have to discuss the you know, as always, the devil would be in the detail and you know, how we would craft the answer.
What I'm trying to get at is I don't think it's appropriate under the provision, the allowing us to issue AOs to cabinet and to just one party. And I'm not hearing that that's what you want to do. I mean, not to one party, to one specific kind of issue, because, you know, other people can rely on it as long as they're materially distinguishable.
Similarly situated,
right,
yes,
right.
If it's indistinguishable. But, you know, then, of course, we get into debates over, you know, what is actually indistinguishable. And again, I think that would depend on, am I saying, you know for these requesters and only for these requesters and for nobody who found themselves in an identical situation? Obviously the answer to that is no. You know, but it would depend on how we, you know, what the words said in terms of how broadly one could construe similarly situated.
A question for Mr. Adkins. I believe, if I'm correct, the 60-day deadline on this request runs on April 8th. Is that the correct date?
That's right.
Thank you. Not that we don't always endeavor to get answers to you all sooner, but just noting for my colleagues, we do have some time if that would be a fruitful exercise. If it's unlikely or impossible, then...
Well, and Madam Chair, we certainly would, I think, be willing to, if we needed to grant additional time, for you all to endeavor in this exercise.
Not that we asked for an extension, right. But thank you for...
Ethically, of course, you have to check with your client before you waive statutes, limitations, and whatnot. Sorry to speak out of turn. I guess I recognize myself.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you. Thank you for hopefully retroactively recognizing me. I have two things. I'll say the first. I'll put what was going to be the second first, so as not to ruin the mood. Certainly open to something. I think the trick is if you do it by process of elimination, meaning you can't spend the money on the following things: express advocacy, FEA, and all. That's still going to leave you some latitude to use the money that I think is going to raise concerns on your side, because mm-hmm. that could be slippery and go different directions.
Yeah, that's not what I'm suggesting.
That's why I just said that's not what you're suggesting. So the way to do it is state more affirmatively what you can do with the money, and you know, I think that's doable. Now, you know, pre-BCRA litigation only, that's too narrow, because even here I think there's money that was given post-BCRA, you know, and that there's an issue there and you know, whether in defending that. So that might be a little too restrictive, but I'm certainly willing to take a look at something that may reflect what we've said here today and state affirmatively what they can do with the money. I wouldn't prefer a redesignation hook, but if that gets us where we need to go, given that I've said that, and if we do hold this over, I would assume they could still file comments and sort of weigh in on that if they thought that was cost prohibitive or they wanted no parts of that. And, I'm not going to put you on the spot today. My guess is you may come back and say, if that's how we get a yes, then that's how we get a yes. To me, it's, I don't need it, but if someone else needs it. But we're certainly all ears to deal with it. The second point I wanted to make on whose burden it is, it's not a personal issue you have to justify to me. It's an agency, to me, it gets deference in how it interprets the statute, right? Chevron deference. But once it goes down a certain road, it has to justify what would be perceived, I think, as a deviation. So it's not, I'm asking you to prove to me. It's the general agency as a whole, I think, has to be careful when it starts drawing lines, because those lines could appear to be arbitrary if this ends up in, a federal court, which post-Unity 08 it very well could. Which brings me to the third point. I said there were two. I guess I misspoke because I just thought of the third one. The flip side of trying to get a middle ground here is this. If this is 3-3, the parties can then decide, well, it's 3-3, so enforcement, we know we're cool, and we're going to go and do this, and it'll be okay, because that's how some folks read AOs. Not all folks read them that way, because not all clients want to be that aggressive, but there are people who take it that way, and they figure, well, we know at least where the commission is, and now we have some sort of guidance. So although a 3-3 doesn't give them the protection of an AO, it does give them something they can take to their clients. The flip side is if we do come up with a middle ground that cabins this in too far, that in a way loses ground on our side. So there has to be kind of a middle ground, because if we're going to cut a line in the sand that might be tighter than where I think this could go, even though I think there is a line of the sand that has to be drawn, that's not really the middle. That's creating an issue that may be more difficult to solve. I throw it out just for your thoughts, if you put something together to take a look at that for me, we're talking litigation, we're talking recounts, we're talking when you get sued, that kind of thing. To me, it's all the same thing. If there's distinctions, we can talk about that. Maybe there's different kinds of litigation, but I don't see this as going off in other directions other than the topics that we raised here today. A cigar is just a cigar. A rose is a rose, whatever cliche you want to use. I don't see there's any angle here that to be played to try to get this to expand into some 95-25 thing. That's not the intent. I think we're all on the same page that at some point there is a limit to the use of this hard money extra bite, right? But my point is, if the limit's too tight, we're going to feel like maybe we're losing the opportunity for the fight another day, right?
Commissioner Weintraub.
I hear you. I think the challenge would be to try and craft an answer that answers their question. And for myself, speaking only for myself, I would probably not want to have a lot of broad language in there about all sorts of other kinds of litigation or all sorts of other, things that could come up that are not in front of us today. And I don't think that precludes you from – I'm not planning on – if I were to draft something, I wouldn't necessarily be planning on putting a lot of onlys in here and sort of like creating the barrier in this AO that says this far and no further, but merely to answer this question and not answer other questions and save other questions for other requesters.
Thank you. You've heard me. Yes.
It's been an interesting 2.5 years, but I'm starting to, get the gist.
Are there further comments? Commissioner Walther.
Real quick, I'm not opposed to further thought on any of this, but just to throw in kind of where I am would not be to limit it to the – I'm open to talking about it, but I think we have to be careful before we start giving an opinion on in the person that's limited to such a limited set of facts. We're kind of rulemaking here if we did this, that it becomes kind of like special legislation and with hard money and – I just don't think that's where we want to be. So we'd have to get approval from the OGC how we can do something like that. But more important to me in my conversation was I'm interested in not going right now, unless I really got persuaded, in going any farther other than to figure out how we could use a rationale here that would take this for basically like for all time, not just because it was... And I think I'm willing to think about pre-BRIC, but it sounds kind of like special legislation. But maybe we can do that. I don't know. I'd want to be careful about how we. I'm not too interested about fighting another day on this. I think that's my point.
Commissioner Weintraub,
I agree that we don't. I don't think we want to be legislating at all. And this may all crater. So I don't want you guys to get your hopes up too much because you know the devil's always in the details. And
we feel better than we felt maybe an hour ago, though. We're trying to stay positive here.
You always try to stay positive,
success,
Mr. Stoner, and I always appreciated that about you. Stay positive, right? Stay positive. I don't know whether this is going to work or not, but I do think that advisory opinions are by their nature. They're not rulemakings. They're not supposed to espouse, you know, new broad principles. What they're supposed to do is to answer a specific request, and they are by their nature to some degree limited to the facts in front of them. And I'm not really interested in, you know, issuing broad pronouncements. I'm not wedded to, you know, walling off other things that might come down the road, but I'm not, you know, I just want to be upfront about this. I'm thinking really narrow, you know, based on the particularly compelling circumstances that are in front of us today. But I retain my concern about the snowball effect and about, you know, how these things, you know, the more you say yes, the harder it becomes with every single, you know, because the next time it'll be, you know, well, there's five or six opinions, so the next time it'll be now there's six or seven opinions, and it just gets harder and harder. And I think at some point, you know, it would go too far for me, and I don't want us to get too far down that path. And as I said, it's fairly easy to say, you know, recount funds are for recounts. Ta-da, there's your line. You know, once we start adding on, then, you know, I think we are, that's why I don't want you to get too hopeful, because it, you know, when we start writing, it may or may not come together in a way that everybody is comfortable with, or that, you know, more critically, or that four people are comfortable with. But I'm willing to try to see whether, you know, I can get myself comfortable with, you know, something that would allow you to do what, you know, I think if we were only looking at this and I wasn't thinking about ramifications down the road, I think you, as I said, you've made a compelling case, but it is hard, as my colleague has acknowledged, to cabin in these opinions sometimes. So, you know, we can try.
Is there any further discussion? I understand there's consensus to hold it over to the next meeting with the attempt to see if there's another draft that may be forthcoming. So thank you for your time, Council. We appreciate your input and your answering of our questions, and we will see you on April 7th. Thank you. We'll take a brief 5-minute break and resume with item 3 on our agenda, the proposed final audit report on Hillary Clinton for President, A0805. So we will resume at 5 until 12. Thank you. Our open meeting of Wednesday, March 16th, and continue on with our agenda. The next item is the proposed final audit report on Hillary Clinton for President, A0805. And presenting this matter to us from the Audit Division are Ms. Wheeler and Mr. Stoltz. Please proceed when ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning. Before the Commission is the proposed final audit report on Hillary Clinton for President. The proposed final audit report contains one finding, which is entitled Receipt of Contribution That Exceeds Limits. Specifically, Hillary Clinton for President failed to resolve in a timely manner 10 excessive contributions totaling $21,400 from political committees. The committee did, however, provide us documentation to demonstrate that the contributions were refunded, although not timely. And I will gladly answer any questions you may have on me regarding this matter.
Thank you, Ms. Wheeler. Are there any questions or comments from commissioners? Are we prepared for a motion? Vice Chair Hunter.
I move adoption of agenda document number 11-12.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Thank you, Ms. Wheeler. The next matter on our agenda is the proposed interpretive rule regarding electronic contributor redesignations, LRA 820. And Ms. Stinley from the Office of the General Counsel will present to us. Please proceed when ready.
Madam Chair, I think you have a late submitted document as well in this matter.
I believe we took care of all of those at the beginning of the meeting, but thank you for the reminder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Before you today is a proposed interpretive rule regarding electronic contributor redesignations. The Office of General Counsel drafted this proposed interpretive rule following the Commission's conclusion that a specific method of electronic redesignation satisfied the written signature requirements of 11 CFR section 110.1B5. Because this conclusion was made at the fieldwork stage of an audit, the Commission instructed the Office of General Counsel to prepare a document to inform the general public and the regulated community of this conclusion. The specific method addressed in the audit required contributors to affirmatively fill out an electronic form authorizing the redesignation and to verify their identity by entering their personal information. The Commission concluded that this method provides the same degree of assurance of the contributor's identity and the contributor's intent to redesignate the contribution as a handwritten signature. Accordingly, the interpretive rule states that this specific practice meets the requirements of 11 CFR 110.1B5 and 110.2B5. It also states that an email sent from a contributor to a committee would not by itself meet the requirements for a written signature, that the Commission encourages the use of innovations in technology to effectuate electronic redesignations, and that the Commission will consider any other methods of electronic redesignation on a case-by-case basis. We understand that the Commission has proposed an alternative draft, and we are happy to answer any questions you may have at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. This matter is before the Commission, as was stated, because in the audit that was mentioned was actually the audit that the Commission just approved. The Commission found that a particular set of steps to attain redesignation would satisfy, would be equivalent to this, the signature requirements. And so this is the Commission's announcement of that procedure that would be available then to other committees. Is there any further discussion on the interpretive rule? Mr. McGann.
Thank you. The only thing I want to note, this is a rather new a new thing, so to speak. You know, with audits, issues come up, and previously, if it gets worked out, the public really wouldn't know necessarily what happened. And I think it's important that this is happening today, because now everyone's going to know an issue came up, and that using email for redesignations is okay, sort of, in some instances, meaning this instance. And I think it's going to give others the opportunity to see a little bit more behind the curtain. So I'm glad we're doing this. I'm more excited that we're doing it because the public gets to see a little bit more of what goes on here behind the scenes than the actual substance, because, you know, redesignation, reattribution is just not that exciting of a topic. But I just wanted to add that this is something that folks, that is not limited just to this committee. Others should take a look at this and see if they could, if it helps their particular situation.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also think this is a good thing for us to be doing, so that everybody is on the same page and everybody out there understands that the Commission has accepted a form of electronic redesignation. It may not be a very sexy issue, but it is one. These redesignations have bedeviled committees and the Commission for so many years, and we keep trying to help committees to, you know, do it better and to, you know, make the requirements secure but not too onerous, so that people can comply with them and we don't get ourselves in
all tied up into knots over this. It's something that committees have gotten wrong over the years. So we keep trying to adjust the rules to, you know, help them get it right and still provide the assurance that people actually are redesignating and these things aren't just happening without the contributors' knowledge. We looked at the specifics of what was done in this case, and it was a little bit more than just an email. There were other steps taken in order to affirm that it was the right person and that they were making this knowing redesignation of their contribution. And I think it was an appropriate decision on the Commission's part both to accept that form of redesignation and to tell everybody that we now will accept it, because I think it will make people's lives a little bit easier and, you know, is also environmentally sound, since we're allowing people to do things electronically rather than having everything on paper. And maybe electronic records, you know, barring computer crashes, maybe electronic records might be easier for people to keep rather than the papers that keep getting lost. So, you know, hopefully this will help some folks out and be a good step forward. And I agree with my colleague, Commissioner McGann, that it is an excellent thing for us to be doing, to be putting out this kind of thing on the public record.
Any further discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I agree also that the procedure overall is one I can live with, notwithstanding the recommendation from General Counsel that perhaps it wasn't going to provide sufficiently accurate verification. The concerns in that regard. I do have a concern now, because in looking at this a little further, trying to modify the draft that was sent by Office of General Counsel, which I thought was pretty sketchy, we drilled down a little bit and found out that, in fact, there was a substantial amount of detail. I guess some people in the Office of General Counsel didn't know about it. Wasn't made clear to us. I guess it was mentioned that there was a possibility there was some information at the meeting we were attended before. But there is, in fact, a more precise and more delineated procedure that was followed. And I know that the situation procedurally is such that we're going to vote on this today. It was amended, redrafted, I think, to solve some of the concerns I had. So I'm going to vote for it. But I think I may add a separate statement just to point out some of the additional steps that were taken that are not really covered. People can decide whether it's important to them or not.
Any further discussion? Commissioner McGann.
When you say sketchy, you mean not as detailed, not sketch in the suspect?
No.
In the street.
Just looking at the counsel's face when you said sketchy. Oh, they sort of said, what?
No,
on the East Coast, sketchy means
vague.
Means, you know, it's kind of shady.
Not at all.
In the Nevada use of the term rather than the New Jersey sense of the term, perhaps. Vice Chair Hunter, is there a motion?
Yes, there is. I move approval of agenda document number 11-13-A and direct OGC to make any technical and conforming edits and publish the document. Thank you.
Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 6-0. Thank you very much. The next matter on our agenda are the draft legislative recommendations for 2011. Mr. Pugh, our Director of Congressional and Intergovernmental Affairs, will present when he's ready.
Thank you. The draft legislative recommendations for 2011 before you today are the result of a process that we started in January and reflect input from all the commissioners and from staff throughout the agency. The four recommendations in the draft received the unanimous support of the commissioners as priorities for this year's legislative recommendations. The four recommendations are electronic filing of Senate reports, fraudulent misrepresentation of campaign authority, conversion of campaign funds, and pay levels for the staff director and general counsel. I'd like to thank the commissioners and all the agency staff for their contributions to this year's recommendations, including particularly Patricia Young, Debbie Chacona, and the OGC team who worked on the drafts, especially Jessica Zelenkoff and Amy Rothstein. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pugh. Their discussion on the legislative recommendations. Commissioner Walther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I had something go on blue in which I supported the recommendations already, but I would like to have the Commission consider retaining a recommendation to provide a basis for us to have a senior executive service program for our agency. We did vote for this at the last time around, and it did not stay on this list. I guess by the way we counted the votes in the ballot, but I'm asking the Commission to consider doing that. This is something we've debated since I've been here, which is not as long, of course, as Commissioner Weintraub, but it does provide for positions, and I think there's 16 in our agency, to obtain a status that can afford them some benefits, both within the government and I think without as well. And I think it can, so I think it's very beneficial for our staff to have that opportunity if they want to take advantage of it. And certainly it's good for us because it involves more training, it involves more emphasis on management. There are really not a great deal of compensation differences now between the SLs and the S, as I understand it. But there are some benefits, and it's seen as a status of people who have the capability to engage in management, especially in government. I think it's also good for us as we go forward and look for new hires that we can draw upon this pool, where now the people who are in the SES category, and we're told, are not inclined to take a position that doesn't retain, allow them the same SES position. And although we can argue the fact that maybe they have equal compensation, some people, I understand, consider it really a step down to do that. So I think this is an opportunity for the agency to again, step up and do the best we can to allow our people to attain the status that they want to. It'll be an option available. It gives us the option to seek employment from people in the future for vacancies from that category with greater ease. And I would point out that the administration has also indicated an interest in taking steps to focus on this as well as other things as an initiative to improve that as well. And I've attached a copy of that to the memorandum that went blue on that. So I'm going to ask, and I can move now to not only approve the recommendation previously, but also to add that as well.
Okay. Procedurally, I think it would be appropriate to have a vote on your motion to approve, which I would assume would be to approve 1116A, and then if it were to be adopted, it would be could be incorporated into 1116 as it move forward to be sent out to Congress. Is there any discussion on the motion? Vice Chair Hunter.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to support your proposal, Commissioner Walther, for some of the reasons that you stated and also because of the last sentence in the amendment, which states that doing this will not require an increase in the Commission's appropriation request.
Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have supported this proposal in the past. I'm happy to support it again. I'm happy to see that it actually looks like it will get support. So good job, Commissioner Walther. Just for the benefit of anybody who cares, Mr. Pugh prepares for us a lengthy list of possible proposals that and basically we have our own little election. We vote on these proposals, and he takes the ones that, as he said, are unanimously supported. And a number of years ago, we made the decision that we weren't going to submit a million legislative recommendations to Congress because that never seemed to get us anywhere, that maybe if we focused in on a few key ones that we thought were most important, we might have better success. I also think it's important that we retain and attract the most competent, most skilled staff that we possibly can to perform the important work in the service of the mission of this agency. So I appreciate Commissioner Walther's efforts not to let this one die, and I'm happy to support the motion.
Is there further discussion on the motion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 6-0. Is there another motion?
I move to approve the legislative recommendations and agenda document 11-16 as amended by the previous motion.
Any discussion on this motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 The motion carries 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Pugh.
Thank you.
Mr. Palmer, are there any management and administrative matters for the commission today?
Madam Chair, there are none.
Thank you very much. That concludes our agenda for today. We are adjourned.